Welcome to Clinician Voice. I'm Robin Geiger, Senior VP of Clinician Advocacy at Ingenovis Health. Today, I welcome a nurse executive supporting clinicians to practice to the full extent of their abilities and promoting an environment of shared governance. Dr. Pat Patton is the Vice President and Chief Nursing Officer at Washington State's largest hospital, Providence Swedish First Hill Hospital. He has held many executive roles, including leading health systems UC Irvine, UC San Francisco, and Catholic Health Initiatives. He's also led magnet redesignation at UC Irvine and UC San Francisco. He sits on several boards and was named as Becker's 50 Hospital and Health System CNOs to know. He has been married for 20 years to Kurt Patton and has four kids, and he resides in Bellevue, Washington. I'm very excited to welcome to the podcast Dr. Pat Patton.
Thank you, Dr. Geiger. It is a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for joining us. If we could start with you telling me more about your role as VP and Chief Nursing Officer at Providence Swedish First Hill Hospital.
Yes, absolutely. And appreciate you asking. You know, the Chief Nursing Officer here at First Hill in Seattle, Washington, really oversees nursing practice. We are licensed for 697 beds here and do over 6,400 births a year in our labor and delivery department. And so we're the top 10 in the nation for delivering babies and taking care of mothers after they have given birth. I'm very excited about that. And so my role is quite busy helping oversee not only our women's, infants, and children's services, but all of our adult services as well. We have many patients that come through our organization. We are a tertiary and quaternary care center here in the Seattle area. And our catchment area goes over to Western and Eastern Washington, up to Alaska. We have many patients that come from Alaska, as well as Northern Oregon and Idaho that come and see us. And so I love being a chief nursing officer. I love what I do because I get to interact with our staff nurses each and every day.
That's wonderful. It definitely sounds like you hold a very important position in keeping all of these nurses well-groomed and working together. As a CNO, what are you most passionate about?
You know, I think the most thing that I'm passionate about, Dr. Geiger, is really a few things. One, giving the nurse a voice. And how does our bedside nurse have a voice in the way that they practice and in the way that they come and show up every single day? I think I'm also most passionate about leadership developing. And leadership really plays a strong role in how we get outcomes in all of our organizations across the United States and the world. You know, I don't get to be at the bedside any longer. So if I can develop nurse leaders and staff nurses at the bedside to be better, show up as better parts of themselves, then that's what I live out. And that's what fills my bucket each and every day.
I love that. So my next question for you was going to be about what inspired you to become nurse executive and be a leader, but it definitely sounds like you've tapped on to some of those things that you're most passionate about.
You know, it's a great question. You know, I was inspired. Let me just start from maybe the beginning, Dr. Geiger, that you know, I really never wanted to be a nurse. You hear many stories from nurses that they always knew they were going to be a nurse, or they grew up and their mother was a nurse, or their aunt was a nurse, or their father was in the healthcare field. Maybe he was a nurse or a physician or a dentist. And I never really wanted to be a nurse in that space. And it wasn't until I joined the Army and became a combat medic. And somebody saw something in me and said, you know, Pat, you really need to go to nursing school. And I told my commanding officer at the time, nope, I'm not going to nursing school. I'm going to go back home and become a veterinarian. And she said, no, I really think you need to be a nurse. And I said, no, ma'am, I'm going to go back and be a veterinarian. And you can see where I ended up today. I ended up as a nurse because She was really one of my strong mentors in my life and really pushed me because she saw something in me that I didn't see in myself. And as I came through the nursing ranks and I started out as a pediatric ICU nurse and then was an emergency department nurse, what I realized is that I felt at the time I did not have a voice in the way that I wanted to do things as a nurse on those units and where I was. And I felt at the time that my leaders were not listening to me effectively. And I said, well, the only way that I can change that is to become a leader myself so that I can listen to my staff and help them change things for the better in their space. And so as I went through the ranks of becoming a nurse manager and a house supervisor, I was actually finally given my very first chief nursing officer position in Eastern Kentucky as part of Catholic Health Initiatives. And that's where I vowed the time to say, as I become a nurse executive and grow in my career, I will always listen to that bedside nurse. And I think that's really what inspired me.
I love that story. And you talk about being inspired and inspiring others. You are known for advocating for shared governance. And I appreciate your work also on our advisory. Can you explain the concept of shared governance to our listeners and its significance in empowering nurses?
Absolutely. And I appreciate you asking the question. You know, shared governance in many organizations, it either exists or it doesn't exist. And when I say that, you can really tell coming into an organization if shared governance is active and is it really being held to its truest form. And so when I say that, do you see nurses talking about what they are going to do each and every day? Do you see nurses questioning the system? Do you see nurses speaking up for themselves and saying, hey, you know, why do we always do it that way? You know, many times as nursing leaders, you come into an organization and people are reluctant to change and they will say to you, you know, Pat, we're not going to change it because that's the way we've always done things. Shared governance turns that upside down and says, you know what, we've always done it that way. Why are we always doing it that way? We should be doing it differently. And then helping them then probe into the evidence and looking into the evidence to see what is out there, what is new, what is in their current practice of way they're doing things. And it doesn't matter whether they work in the emergency department, in home health, in critical care, in ambulatory. There is literature out there to support things. And what I always tell my nurses, if they're questioning the process or they want to get more engaged and active in shared governance, is I tell them, if the evidence is not out there to support what you're doing or what you want to change, guess what? Then you're going to then be part of developing the evidence and you are going to be publishing the work you're going to be doing. And we need to do that through a really processed research approach or an evidence-based practice approach so that we can add to the body of evidence as professionals and put it out there because you have great ideas, great ways of doing things. And if it's positive and has positive outcomes, then we should be adding to the body of evidence.
Right. Now, thinking back to my exposure as a new ICU nurse, you know, I didn't always speak up. So what you're saying really resonates. As I grew in leadership, I began to ask the uncomfortable questions and really strengthen my voice. So how can leaders ensure shared governance within their health systems or hospitals?
You know, this question is really it comes to life for me right now here at Swedish First Hill. And I say that because when I arrived here, I asked where they were in their journey around developing shared governance and having it very active. And they said, well, Pat, you know, we used to have it very active here back before the pandemic. And then when the pandemic came, it kind of fell off and we didn't really participate as much. And it's really more or less non-existent here. And so I started rounding and talking with the nurses and I said, did shared governance really play a role in your career? Did it make sense to you? Did it make a difference to you? And many of the seasoned nurses here said, yes, we loved having shared governance, but it's fallen off and we need somebody to help us get it restarted. And so I came into this organization and said, okay, let's do that. Let's get nurses at the bedside and let's hear your voice about how you want to do that. And I would say to all of our listeners out there, if you don't have shared governance and you're struggling where to start, get your nurses together and ask them how to start, number one. But number two, go learn about shared governance yourself. Find a trusted colleague in the United States that already has it going and ask them how they got it started or where it went from them. I can tell you here at First Hill, we are combining our forces with our sister hospital down the street, Cherry Hill, that's part of Swedish as well. And we're bringing the two forces together and bringing the staff nurses together to really talk about where we're at and what we can do. Earlier this week, we held a retreat around shared governance and had 135 nurses come to that retreat. The majority of them were staff nurses who came and really talked about, you know, how passionate they were, what they were going to do. But what we did was we gave them the tools to put in their tool belt to go back to their units to start shared governance. Because again, as many of you can identify with, you're probably having new grads that are coming into your organization at a higher level post-pandemic because they're excited about getting into nursing and they know nothing about shared governance unless they got maybe a lecture on it in nursing school. But 9 times out of 10, most of them have never heard of shared governance and what it is. So you have to start from the beginning with them. What I also would encourage others out there who are going through to start shared governance or want to get it going is that you have to engage your nursing leaders, mm-hmm. because if they don't understand it, then they can't help support the nurses who are passionate about getting it started. So make sure that you do a both and approach in making sure that not only are you giving the staff nurses everything they need to be successful, but also giving the nurse leaders everything they need to be successful to support it in their health system or hospital where they're at.
No, that's a good point. And you touched on something really impactful. Like, we aren't always given the information we need. We have to be resourceful and get that information. And that's, you know, with clinicians or leaders in order to make sure that we're successful. So that's really important. Could you share some examples of successful implementation of shared governance in your history in healthcare settings? And what was the impact for that on the nurses and their nursing practice?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, this question is so key, especially if you're a magnet organization or a pathway to excellence organization in the United States, because it really has to have change that comes from the bedside nurse and where they're at. When I was at UCI Health, one of the nurses, again, brought up the question like, Pat, why do I have to change my IV every 72 hours? And I said, I don't know. Why do you? And they said, well, that's what our policy says. And I said, right. Okay, so what would you like to do differently? And she said, I really think because our average length of stay is about 4 days in our hospital, and instead of changing it the last day right before they go home, I'd like to see if we could extend it out to 96 hours. And I said, okay, great. Go look at the literature, see if the literature supports it, and let's do a research project around it to see if actually that does make a difference and that we're not getting infections or we're not getting, you know, redness around the IV site, or we're not getting things that are causing harm to the patient to do that. So she said, okay, great. Went, did some literature search, found actually that there were a couple pieces of literature that did support 96 hours of changing IVs in that space, and implemented it at our hospital. Did a study around it, showed that there was no harm in those patients. And again, increased nursing satisfaction because they didn't have to change them every 72 hours, right. And increased patient satisfaction because the patients actually didn't have their IV put in but one time and didn't usually, unless they were a long length of stay patient, have it changed once during their stay. So it really showed a lot of great success, but that idea came from a bedside nurse. And one of the things that we have to do as nursing leaders is we have to open our ears and we have to listen and we have to say to them, look, what are we going to do? How are we going to do that? And if you have an idea, then let's try it. Let's see if it works. And if it doesn't work, let's celebrate failure, celebrate what they did, celebrate that it didn't work, because guess what? That nurse is going to go back and try again and do something different in that space. A second example that I'm really proud of our nurses, mm-hmm. when I was at UCSF, one of the nurses said, you know, why are we hiring nurses in this way? We're not getting any applications, but we're getting really a homogenous group, and we want our unit to be more diverse. And I said, okay, what are you going to do about it? And so the staff nurses, actually worked with HR and said, look, we are not going to start interviewing people for our open positions here until you give us a diverse set of candidates to choose from and to interview so that we can look at diversity in our unit. And our HR leaders were impressed with that. They got to work with them and really opened it up and reached out to certain other organizations that had diversity within them that allowed those applications to start rolling in, number one, but number two, that unit to start interviewing. And their diversity actually increased within their mm-hmm. unit, and they were most proud of it, and actually presented at a national conference based on what they did. And that was all because of shared governance and their nursing practice.
That's very impactful. I love the examples that you utilized there, or that you shared there, because we've taught nurses to think critically, and we should allow them to do that and really listen to them. It's important for leadership teams to not only advocate for nurses or frontline clinicians, but also to kind of include them in the discussions. Think of how much that impacted the patients and their comfort, you know, not having to have those IVs changed twice when they didn't really need that in that period of time. Peeling that tape off that isn't always pleasant. That's awesome. We talk about leaders fostering shared governance, leaders like yourself. What are your thoughts on self-advocacy within the healthcare profession, and how nurses can get that seat at the table for important discussions?
It's a great question. I would say I'm going to answer this probably in two different ways, Dr. Geiger, in that I would say that, first of all, let's just stay in the shared governance type of realm. Nurses have to get engaged, and they have to speak up. And we talk about here about speaking up for safety, and many high reliable organizations talk about speaking up for safety. And so what I tell my nurses is not only speak up for safety, but speak up for yourself, speak up for your colleagues. Some of your colleagues may not have their own voice. Encourage them to have their own voice so they can have a seat at the table. So when your unit practice councils are happening, engage with them. And if you don't either have time or you don't feel comfortable right away, then why don't you send an email to the chair of that unit practice council, or send an email to your manager, or have a meeting with your manager. If you don't feel comfortable in a large setting, that's okay. Just make sure that you do that. And then as you feel more comfortable, and as people ask you, tell me more about this, so we'd love to understand where you're going and what you're doing, that means they're going to get a seat at the table and get a seat to where they're going to be, and really make a difference in that, not only their unit, but in our profession overall. I would secondly answer this question to really say that nurses really need to think about being on boards. And when I say boards, it doesn't have to be on the Microsoft board or the Amazon board. You can be on a local board there in your local community, whatever it is, and however you see yourself fitting in. Are you on your local parent-teacher organization, your PTO or PTA, whatever you call it in your area of the country? Are you sitting on a March of Dimes board? Are you looking at different organizations that are making a difference? And if you're struggling to try to figure out, well, I don't know what is available in my area, or what other national organizations I could really make sure that I could get a seat at the table, mm-hmm. I encourage you to go on and look at the Nurses on Boards Coalition on the internet, and you will find many, 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 many different opportunities that you can be engaged in. But where nurses have a seat at the table, nurses' voices are heard and nurses can make a difference. The American Nurses Association say that one out of every 100 people in this country is actually a nurse. And so that means we need to have seats at the table at many, many different levels in order for us to be heard. And then because we do things differently than many of our other professions, and we look at things holistically. So make sure you get that seat at the table.
Right. That's very important. Just, I think just sitting and being quiet and allowing is just a perfect example of a way of not to really strengthen the profession. So I love what you had to share there. I'd like to shift the discussion just a bit. Ingenivus supports inclusivity and well-being for all clinicians. Would you share how you leverage agency or travel nurses within your health system?
Absolutely. You know, we love our agency and travel nurses here at Swedish First Till, and we love them so much that many of them convert from being a travel nurse to really being full-time staff here. And we do that in a variety of ways. You've heard me talk about shared governance and how we do that. We encourage our travel nurses to be on our shared governance committees, and we do that on purpose, because we know that many of them have been across this country and seen things that have been done different ways in different health systems. And so why not ask them to bring best practices here to Swedish First Till so we can be the best of the best to do that? We would be doing ourselves a disservice by not doing that. And I love how you asked the question about all clinicians, Dr. Geiger, because not only do we encourage nurses to be on our shared governance committees, but we encourage any other clinician or non-clinician actually to be on those shared governance committees, to include respiratory therapy, to include physical or occupational therapy, to include our EVS workers to be there, to include our nursing assistants, our unit coordinators who are sitting at the desk, because they have lots to add to do that. And we have many agency and travel people in those spaces as well. But if we didn't ask, we wouldn't be able to hear their voice and what they had to say in order to make things better.
I like that you mentioned, and just, you know, marinating on some of the things that you said, you mentioned all clinicians. And I know that, you know, we definitely have a nursing background, but many of our listeners may not understand that chief nursing officers that in within their team or their umbrella is clinical and non-clinical. So I'm glad that you shared that. You also mentioned earlier about how you support nurses to advance, including your travel nurses or contingent staffing team. So thank you for that. How does fostering leadership contribute to improved patient outcomes and overall healthcare delivery?
It's a great question. You know, we have a high percentage of bachelor's prepared nurses here already, but we do have our associate degree nurses and diploma degree nurses here as well. And I always encourage nurses to go back to school so that they can not only further their education, but to really then advance their careers and to really foster their leadership potential. We have many, many nurses out there who are strong leaders, and they need to continue to get their degrees. Many organizations across the country won't even allow you to get a director or a CNO role without a master's degree. Right. So we ask them, go back and do that. But to take it even to then to the local level, I would say that when our agency and travel nurses come into our organization, yes, we have permanent nurses who are full-time staff here who are permanent charge nurses. But we also see leadership potential in our agency and travel nurses to say, hey, you know, we'd really love for you to be a charge nurse and a relief charge nurse. So when our mm-hmm. permanent charge nurses are off, can you step into that role? Or, hey, would you like to be a mentor? We can see that you're going to probably be here long term, and we have some new grads. Would you be able to take a new grad and precept them to show them what you've seen and what you've done in your career? And they willingly usually step up to the plate and said, absolutely, we would love to do that. And that's really fostering that leadership with all staff across our organization. But what it does in addition to that is it fosters a sense of community, so that when you walk on to one of our units here at Swedish First Till, you really can't tell the difference between a travel, an agency nurse, or a full-time nurse, because we incorporate everything we do around each other.
Wow. That's great. And I imagine they really love the opportunities you provide as well.
Absolutely.
Wonderful. And, you know, we may have touched on this a bit. I'd like to expand here, though, and talk about what role does continuous education and professional development play in empowering these nurses and clinicians to take on leadership and advocate for themselves?
Absolutely. This is one of those things that I tell my nurses when they said, you know, Pat, I really don't want to go back to school. I don't need to go back to school. Or, you know, I really don't need to go to that leadership development course because, you know, I'm good with what I have. I'm comfortable where I'm at. And then that's where I challenge them. And I said, okay, I want to help you feel uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, I want you to feel uncomfortable because I can just speak for myself that when I went back to school and I got my master's degree and I went and got my doctorate degree and I've attended other leadership development courses, as I was into those programs, I figured out that I finally didn't know what I didn't know. And so when I didn't know what I didn't know, I could say, oh my gosh, I didn't even know that. What a great idea, or what a great course, because it helped then expand my horizons and helped my professional development go in a whole different direction because of those things. So I say to the listeners out there, if you don't want to go back to school, that's fine. Don't go back to school, but never stop being educated. Take a CE course, go to a leadership development course. If your manager or director or CNO comes to you and says, hey, I would really like for you to attend this course, before saying no, at least consider it and say, is there something in that course that maybe I don't know? And is it going to help me become not only a better leader, but a better person overall? So empowering them to do that really makes a difference in their lives. And I've had several nurses come back to me at a later date and said, Pat, I'm so glad that you pushed me. I'm so glad that you supported me. I'm so glad that you helped me get into that course because, again, it made them a better person.
That's awesome. Thinking on just some future thoughts here, how can nurse executives support and mentor frontline nurses in their journey towards leadership?
You know, mentorship is near and dear to my heart and what we do. Many organizations have started mentorship programs, and I encourage you to go on and just Google search mentor or mentorship to do that. Mentorship is a lot more than just getting together and having a cup of coffee, but it can be just that. And nurses actually want mentors, but they're afraid to ask. Right. And so sometimes we as nursing leaders have to go out and ask them, hey, do you have a mentor? Would you like to have a mentor? And to see where they're at and partner them up with people either in like fields or even totally different fields to help expand and develop their horizons. But you have to ask the question first in order to help develop their leadership journey. And their leadership journey is whatever they want it to be. So without us asking, we will never know what their journey is going to be, but we can help foster that journey if we're going to help get them a mentor.
I like that. Yeah, I often speak on mentorship, and the experience can be tailored in so many ways to whatever you like. There's reciprocal mentorship and peer-to-peer mentors. So I like that you're incorporating that into what you're doing with these frontline nurses and clinicians. Looking ahead, what do you envision as the future of shared governance in nursing and healthcare?
Yeah, it's a great question. I know that the American Organization of Nurse Leaders is really looking at this in a different way and promoting it in a different way. And I don't even want to start to speak on that because, again, they really have done a lot of work around this to promote this across the country. And I would encourage you, if you're interested, to go to their website and to look at it because they have a lot of things on there that they have done. But I would say to you as leaders, and again, here's what I want you to hear from me, is that shared governance can be anything. I mean, can be in anywhere in healthcare or in non-healthcare. And I say that because people want to help govern their practice. And it doesn't matter whether you're a nurse, a nursing assistant, a therapist, a lab tech, an EBS worker, you can still have shared governance in healthcare in a whole different way. And I tell my nursing leaders all the time, if you will embrace shared governance, if you will take it head on, if you will help promote that in your nurses on your units, your job will be easier because they're doing the work for you and helping improve the efforts on your unit and where you practice, whether it's on an inpatient space, outpatient space, ambulatory space, anywhere that you practice. If you'll embrace shared governance, understand it, and help give them the tools that they need to be successful, you will be successful as well.
Really strong advice and very appreciative for you to share that. Is there any other advice that you would like to share with clinicians and healthcare leaders today?
Yes, I would say that, you know, as you continue on in your career, and no matter what that is or where that is, to continually listen, continually have your ear to the ground of what's going on, and to never stop learning. Because if you stop learning, you become stagnant. And none of us want to be stagnant. So continue to learn and be who you are as a person, but also as a leader.
Dr. Patton, thank you for joining us today.
Thanks so much for having me, Dr. Geiger. It's been a great conversation with you.
It's been great. And to our listeners, we hope that you enjoyed listening in today and will join us next time on Clinician Voice.